Rebel Radio Podcast. Matt, how you been?
Good, man. Just glad I didn't end up in freaking...
Your voice is really loud in my ear.
Oh, sorry. Oh, sorry, man. You know, the sensitivity. I'm like, why are you pointing at your ear, man? Sorry about that. Like, kind of a bit of the Frank syndrome there.
I know, man.
Not sure what went on. Yeah, Frank would always talk a little too close to the mic. We're like, man, dude, you know, just back off the mic. I guess it was my turn to do that.
That's right.
But
man. We survived crazy weather we got last night, man. No power, yeah, man. Wind and rain, and
a lot of wind.
Blew through here for about 45 minutes, and the saying in Texas is true: if you don't like the weather, wait 5 minutes because it's going to come through and fuck shit up. Sometimes,
heck yeah, dude, it's gonna fuck it up in one way. It's either gonna be too rainy, too windy, too cold, too hot. It's never just right. Maybe one or two days out of the year, but that's about it.
Not too often. But that was crazy, man. I mean, I came home and had no power because I was out with the kids, and it just being the night at my mom's because she had power. So I was like, man, I'm not going to sleep with sweaty balls. Fuck that. You know,
heck no. Not when there's nice, cool air conditioning flowing through your gonads.
That's it. But that's right. But here we are ready to podcast. And, you know, it's Texas. It's the weather. It is what it is.
It is what it is, man.
So, yeah. So so bad weather this past night in Texas. But here we are. Ready to record again. And I don't know, Syncaster just did some weird error thing, but I think we're good. You can hear me, right? We can hear us now.
Yeah, I can hear you.
but man, it's you know, last week we did our 350th episodes and you know, Indiana Jones, The Last Crusade, and you know, now here we are on to the next 50 towards 400. And you know, we got some stuff to talk about today, and I don't want to waste too much time getting into this because you know, we normally do the news in between what we watch this week in the feature film, and we're still going to do that. But if we start running long, we might just skip the news. We'll see, because I feel like this movie that we both saw in theaters this week has a lot to talk about.
And then, definitely.
Then we've got our feature film Bumblebee coming up in just a little bit. So stay tuned with us on the program, as they say.
On the program, yeah.
And, but man, we both went and saw, and it's no secret, we both went and saw Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. And it's funny, last week and a couple weeks ago when we did Into the Spider-Verse, we were talking about, you know, can they strike gold twice and with a sequel? Because, you know, Philip Lord and Christopher Miller did not do as well with their Lego Movie 2 sequel. But this time, they not only did they strike gold again, but they struck platinum, I would say, with a absolutely incredible sequel. One of the, I mean, this might be saying a lot for a movie it's a week old, but this is right up there with the best sequels of all time. I mean, it's maybe that's a bold statement, but I really feel that way. Remarkably well done film. And yes, it's animated, but man, this movie, it might be animated, but don't let you think for a second that it's only for children. This movie hits on a lot of deep emotional levels throughout the film and that adults can enjoy. And especially as a parent, there was a moment in this film that as a parent even got to me, and that's just Miles's mother wanting him to be that little boy that she raised and knows that he can be. And, I thought it had some powerful messages in it. And, but what a film. I mean, you know, every few years, you know, a movie comes along and, you know, whether it was Mad Max Fury Road or something that just completely creates a new cinematic experience, blows you out of the water. You walk out of the theater going rejuvenated about cinema and just feeling really good. And that's what Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is. It's a remarkably well done film. And it's a middle part of a trilogy. The third one's coming out in March, and you know, spoiler alert here in a way, but it ends on a humongous cliffhanger.
Humongous.
But you know, you don't feel unsatisfied.
No,
you know,
no,
because you know, it's coming and you know, there's hope for the future is how the story is going to end. You know, it wasn't an unsatisfying cliffhanger. It didn't feel forced.
like
The Matrix Reloaded. Okay. The perfect example of a forced cliffhanger. They felt like they had to force a cliffhanger on you to get you interested in Revolutions. And when you think back on Reloaded, the cliffhanger doesn't really make a lot of sense. It's like, that was stupid. Yeah. You know, this cliffhanger ends where it makes sense. And you walk out of the theater still feeling like, okay, that was freaking awesome. I can't wait for the next one, but I'm going to absorb all of this in right now. You know, and I think that's how I felt. And just lots of – the animation is incredibly well done. Lots of new styles used in this one, even compared to Spider-Verse. Mm-hmm. Where they make all the different universes that he visits kind of organic in their own way with different styles of animation. You know, whether it was Gwen's universe, which was withdrawn and a little shady because she's withdrawn from who she is and her parents and her relationship with her father, to Miles's universe, which is full of, you know, just kind of almost like a regular comic book because it's his story. You know, it looks like a comic book, Miles's universe. And then you have Miguel's spider universe, which is full of all kinds of combinations of all different Spider-Mans. Did you notice how they did that? It's bleak and it's bright and it's colorful, but it's also got all kinds of different things in it. Then you have, I don't want to say his name wrong, but when they visit the Indian Spider-Man in his universe, mm-hmm. and it's very culturally influenced and colorful and really well thought out to fit his world, and just remarkable things like that that this film does that people may not notice. You know, they go into it, they watch the story, and I don't think they pick up on the amount of detail that's put into this film. And there were people that missed it on the first film. You know, I talked to friends that had no idea that Into the Spider-Verse is like a living comic book, and I had explained to them the whole details and the points of it and why the animation looked the way it did. You know, the same with this one, just the amount of detail put into this. It's such a remarkably thought-out film. The little Lego sequence is animated by a 14-year-old. That's incredible. You know,
whenever I read that, I was like, wow, you know, a 14-year-old did that.
And according to the producers, almost every single version of Spider-Man has ever existed in some kind of media, cameos in this film, even if you don't see them all. And I think they said something like over 200 different types of Spider-Man, maybe more.
Maybe, yeah.
And I was texting you, and I think, like I said, the only one I don't think was in the film is a Nicholas Hammond Spider-Man from the 1970s television show, because that thing has been tied up in such bad rights for years that Hammond wasn't even allowed to cameo in one of the Raimi films because of the contract from the 1970s. Wow. And that's why the Spider-Man series has never been streaming. It has not aired on television since the Sci-Fi Network had rights to it back in the 90s. I don't know the whole story behind it, but there's some sort of major mess behind the 1970 Spider-Man TV series and why it's never re-aired. It's good or you want to watch it, but it's a nostalgic thing, you know?
Yeah. Have a nice, you know, tip of the cap to it, right? You know?
What are your thoughts on Across the Spider-Verse, man?
Man, the biggest thing, you know, and I told, you know, I messaged you about it. I was like, what a cliffhanger. Just, you know, taking a page out of Empire Strikes Back. You know?
A comic book.
Yeah, a comic book, really.
I mean, how many times did you go to the comic store and you get to the end and Wolverine's fixing to square off with Magneto and you're like, you got to wait till next month. Only in this case, we have to wait.
Until next time.
Only in this case, we have to wait about 8 months. You know?
Yeah, at least it's, you know, right around the corner. You know, it'll be early 2024. But I'm still, you know, just, man, you know, what's going to happen? And I saw a little, animation. We're not going to get into spoiler territory here. I saw some cool stuff about the colors around Miles's head whenever he gets bit from, by the spider in Enter the Spider-Verse, or Into the Spider-Verse, sorry. And how it changes, his Spidey sense changes after he encounters Peter, the Peter Parker of his universe. So many details, so many nods to different things and different paths. I think it's great. I don't know how else to word it. It's definitely worth seeing. It's not just for kids. It's a love letter to all things Spider-Man and comics and why comics are great. And there's so much packed into these films. You think that it'd just be really hard to balance, But it balances it really well. And, you know, even the ridiculousness of it, you know, you think Spider-Ham was ridiculous. Well, there's a little bit, you know, more ridiculousness in the Spider-Verse, and it works. It just works.
Yeah.
You know, you're not like, well, that doesn't make sense. It's like, it's awesome. You know, you don't have that reaction like you would with other movies, you know, trying different things, but it's able to pull off so much. It's ambitious and it pulls it off. It's one of those films where it's ambitious and it's like, well, man, you know, you had to go big or go home attitude and you went home. You know,
it does it so seamlessly though. It doesn't even feel overly ambitious.
No,
it just tells a remarkably well done story. And it's, if the first one was a living comic book, this one is a living comic book crossover to the extreme, you know, that works so well on screen. The voice acting is phenomenal, from Haley Steinfeld to Oscar Isaac as Miguel. I mean, he's wonderful. You know, the little subtle things, like when Miguel realized that Miles spoke Spanish too. I mean, they do a wonderful job in the animation just to show Miguel's expression on his face. Like, okay, I can get along with this kid, you know? And even when Miguel in this, I'm not trying to voice spoilers too, because people have seen, even when Miguel tries to stop, when he tries to stop Miles from what Miles is trying to do, you know, Miguel, you know, once also has gains his respect for him as to what's going on as he starts to put it all together, you know, and unfortunately has to tell Miles some harsh truth whenever he is chasing him, but he realizes that it had to be done, because it's going to give Miles that driving force, I think, to what he needs to do to get out of the predicament that he's in at the end of the film as we lead into part three.
Yeah.
Because Miguel is not a bad guy, you know, but he's been there. He knows what it takes to be a Spider-Man and to drive Miles to what he needs to do.
Yeah, he definitely has a different approach to coaching versus Peter B. Parker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one very, very lax, the other very serious and very, you know, passionate, you know.
We talk about the ridiculousness of it, like the baby, like Peter P. Parker's baby. I thought it was funny. It's done well. It's funny. And at the end of the film, he's like, don't tell mom. We're going on another adventure. And I think that's really cool because it feels like something a Peter Parker would do, you know.
Definitely.
I thought it was cool how they interweaved, and these are some minor spoilers, but how they interweaved the live-action Spider-Mans into this film just through some background information. Really cool to see the Aaron from Tom Holland's Spider-Man Homecoming, which I always wondered if MCU is ever going to come back around to that.
Yeah.
You know, lots of rumors swirling that Sony wants to get a Miles movie made. Here's my thing with that, and this is a little bit of a tangent. I'm all for a Miles movie, but Sony almost feels like they're treating rushing a Miles movie as a promotion for Miles, and it's not a promotion. The Miles story is already being told extremely well in these films with one more to go. So they need to treat a Miles film in live action with just as much care as the animated film has gotten and treat it as its own story, not a promotion of an animated version, if that makes sense. Because that's how I feel like Sony's trying to treat it. Like, oh, Miles makes money. We need to get a movie made. That's the wrong approach to take.
Yeah.
You know, because Miles deserves better. Because this is one of those unique characters that, you know, we've had a few characters in the last 20 years, from Harley Quinn to and Miles, and I'm trying to think, there was another one that I just lost my mind, that have come out of either animated properties or comic books and have completely transcended the genre from these very popular characters they come from, whether it was Harley Quinn and Batman or now Miles coming from the Spider-Man universe, and have and that's rare, because you have these characters with 80 years of history, you know, with Superman, Spider-Man, and Batman, and whoever they are. And we've had some writers, and Brian Michael Bendis created Miles Morales in the last 20 years, that have done an amazing job creating new characters that are, their popularity is going through the roof. And that didn't happen in comic books for a long time. Damian Wayne, that's another one. It's so popular. You know, you mentioned Robin now. Most people know Robin as Damian Wayne now, you know? And that's just and Miles is one of those, and Miles might be, getting there to the top list. He could pass up Harley Quinn as the number one modern created character that's transcended from the funny pages to a larger world, you know, live action, movies, whatever. And he has that ability to do so. I mean, we already had the Miles Morales game. We have Spider-Man 2 coming out, which Miles is going to be in. You know, and these movies, there's one more to go, and Philip Lord and Christopher Miller have confirmed that it's just a trilogy. They have no plans of continuing afterwards, that Miles' story will be done after these three. I think that's a good thing. I think just tell three good stories, you know, and don't ruin it. You know, don't keep going where we water it down. You know, tell a solid trilogy of stories, and I can't wait for part three to come out. You know, I misread it whenever I was reading. I thought it was like a year and a half away. And I'm like, oh, it's March. Yeah. I forgot what year we read. I'm like, oh, March 2044. That's only a few months away.
I thought you knew something that I didn't. I was like, man, did I read
it? I know. No. Really? I misread. I honestly, for some reason, thinking we were in 2022. I was like, oh, wait, Mark doesn't know what year we're in. But being such a remarkable film. My kids loved it. You know, we were all blown away by it, walk out of the theater. Baby girl went with me to see it, and she was really good in the theater because lots of colors and lots of moving action, so she enjoyed it too. And, really good stuff, man. It definitely goes into Gwen's character deeper. You know, the first movie was very much about Morales or about Miles. This movie is a lot about Miles too, but it's also a lot about Gwen and who she is and finding herself as being Spider-Woman, which I thought was really cool.
Her struggles.
I love the Spider-Punk animation, how he's straight off of an old punk rock record. I thought that was a really cool, unique idea to do. A lot of people might not even notice that, but that was awesome. Taking the Scarlet
Andy
Spider.
Sandberg. Scarlet Spider. Andy Sandberg.
Who is the clone Spider, of course, Ben Reilly. And he was almost like right off the comic page, like a live-action moving image from the comics. I thought that was a cool idea. Some of the cameos I did notice, I definitely noticed the PlayStation Spider-Man. I noticed the Spectacular Spider-Man. I noticed Doc Ock from the 92 animated series. I did not – people say Spider-Man from 92 animated series is there. I just didn't see it on first viewing, so I'm not sure it was there. I'm waiting for the YouTube videos that come out point out the cameos. You know,
yeah.
I did see go ahead.
Jack Quaid is Peter Parker in Gwen Stacy's universe.
Right. I did see the PlayStation video game from PlayStation 1. I saw that Spider-Man in the background. Like a video game character. The 8-bit Spider-Man is actually a real Spider-Man from a game back in the 80s. So that does exist.
The NES one.
Yeah.
I played that game.
So there are some cool little things like that. I'm sure there's a lot more. Like I said, I expect the YouTube videos to hit in the next week or two with all these cameos are cool, because some of those are cool to watch. Like that second Space Jam movie, it kind of sucked, right? It wasn't that good. But Wyatt was watching a video one time with all the cameos, and I was like, well, I didn't know all these cameos were in Space Jam 2. And that was cool just to see all these cameos, you know? Like Ready Player One had tons of cameos in it.
I heard there was a Michael B. Jordan cameo in there, and that they're like, oh, we found Michael Jordan. And they're like, what? And it's Michael B. Jordan.
Right. But Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse is just a remarkably well done movie. Highly recommend going to see it. It made a ton of money. People went in droves to go see it this weekend. People taking their kids and families. And that's the cool thing about it. It's PG. So it's definitely a family film. And it's rare to get these movies nowadays. You know, the comic movies, you know, are family friendly, but they're PG-13. So sometimes they can be borderline, you know, some adult themes, you know, some of the stuff in Guardians 3 with the abusing the animals could be pretty dark, you know, for kids. But Across the Spider-Verse definitely is for families, and anyone can watch them and enjoy them. And like I said, kids are adults, but the creators know their audiences so well that they're not so kid-friendly that they're insulting adults by any means at all, because I think adults definitely can relate to these characters and what's going on in the Spider-Man animated universe. You know, it's so funny, about 5 years ago when they first announced Into the Spider-Verse, you know, everyone's thoughts were like, oh, Spider-Man animated? Like, who's going to watch that? I mean, you know, because Spider-Man, you know, Homecoming had come out, but Sony's track record, you know, wasn't, you know, they had an animated film. People were like, what is this? Yeah, it went under the radar. You know, people just weren't sure what to make of it. And here we are now getting a trilogy of films from a remarkable animation studio and job that they've done so far. And, you know, there was even talks that Sony's Spider-Man animated film a few years ago was going to be like a direct-to-video release and end up getting a theatrical release. And I'm sure Sony is very happy they chose that path, you know, because they're making
some money. That's crazy to think that it could have been a direct-to-video release. I mean, I think it still would have found its way to theaters as a sequel. But, you know, it would have had to, you know, it would have had to be, you know, a la John Wick, you know, the first one, and just have this, you know, huge, you know, success on home download or DVD buying or Blu-ray buying, really. Now, but yeah, that's crazy to think that it could have been just straight to streaming, like a Rob Schneider movie.
Yeah, because I mean, I love Spider-Verse, and I think I love Across the Spider-Verse even more. I mean, it was just such a good film. I can't wait to see it again. You know, it's definitely going to be a have to buy it when it comes out, no doubt. You know, just a good movie, and you know, and despite being on vacation this week, that's really about all I really watched. I've been kind of lazy with TV. I did watch a couple more episodes of Bad Batch. I'm about halfway through season two. And in the midst of it, I went back and rewatched the last four episodes of The Clone Wars, where it intertwines with episode three. I mean, you know, did you ever sit down and watch those last four? You know,
last four episodes takes of place, with Ahsoka, right?
Yeah, where it takes place while episode three is going on. I mean, just, man, and those are four.
Maul's, you know, unveiling the plan to Ahsoka, and she's like, no, there's no way.
Yeah. You know, I mean, those four episodes are. I mean, those are for the best Star Wars story told episodes ever. I mean, just they're so good. And I kind of went back to watch them to see where Clone Wars led off, as I to kind of give refresh my memory going into Bad Batch. And because there's an episode where Rex appears, and I couldn't remember why Rex was where he was after the episode. And I remember because he decides to go out on his own after the Clone Wars. And so I remember now. I know you've been trying to watch Babylon 5, but man, you need to get on Bad Batch 2 before season 3 comes out. I think you'll really like it.
Yeah, that's another one I need to get into. I watched the first season of Bad Batch, but I need to get caught up on season 2.
So you're not that far behind then.
Yeah. I did watch some Babylon 5 this week. Prime had Air. And I was like, my cousin had watched it, said that it was good. He's a big sports fan. I was like, you know, I was like, I'm going to watch it. And it's good. I mentioned to somebody, I said, man, why don't they have Michael Jordan in this film at all? You know, not even a cameo at the end showing, like, you know, him at a, like, recent press conference or something. Or they've got stock footage of him. But, someone had made the comment to me that they probably just couldn't afford it. And I said, man, that makes sense, because you've already paid for Matt Damon, Ben Affleck, Chris Tucker, Marlon Wayans, Viola Davis.
And no, I thought I read it was a contract reason. There was some reason why he couldn't appear in the
movie. Okay.
Yeah, it was some sort of contract thing, because Ben Affleck talked about it in something as why they could not have him. So some one of the weird things.
Okay. But it was cool to see how, you know, Michael's deal with Nike changed the market. And I guess before then, they weren't really in the basketball shoe business. No. They were, you know, they were running shoes.
Well, nobody was.
And they still, Well, Adidas and Converse ruled the basketball shoe market.
Right. But they didn't have, like, a player really marketing them. It was for, like, a sole shoe. If I remember right.
Yeah.
Magic Johnson, those guys did commercials for him, but there wasn't like a Magic Johnson shoe. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they got the idea because there was a tennis player that was like, oh, yeah, this racket was made especially for me. And he's like, you know, they're like, let's make a shoe around him and it'll be his shoe. And, you know, we're going to call it the Air Jordan. And it'll be the first of its kind. And so they pitched it to him, and they didn't have a huge budget. And, you know, they were able to make it a really good deal because they were going to give him a cut from every Jordan, every Nike Air Jordan that sold. And I guess that was, like, you know, something that wasn't really done in the market at the time. So it was like groundbreaking. So it was cool to see that getting done. Matt Damon, he does a good job. Affleck's good. Jason Bateman. Yeah, he's in there too. He's good. So good flick to watch if you're you know, kind of down on the list. It's not my favorite movie of this year, but it's a good movie. I, you know, ended up watching some old episodes of Gundam Wing. My son had mentioned that he had watched a couple episodes with his cousin while he spent the night over there. And I was like, oh, let's watch a few more. And I said, my favorite Gundam is Heavy Arms. So I had to make sure he saw Heavy Arms episodes where he was blasting missiles out of his shoulder plates and had the big old minigun on his arm. Watched some of that. And that's about it.
Yeah. I watched The Crow the other night too. So I watched kind of old stuff. I just felt like watching The Crow for some reason. Let's blow through some news before we get today's featured film. Speaking of Spider-Man, for all those waiting for Spider-Man 2 on the PlayStation 5, October 20th, finally a release date after like 4 years of development. So it's coming out before Christmas time for those people waiting for the Spider-Man 2 game. Captain America 4 has a new title. It's now called Captain America Brave New World. As some images were released this week of his kit, Anthony Mackie's new suit, standing next to Harrison Ford, is now playing General Thunderbolt Ross. So I don't know what that means. Sometimes images precede posters and trailers, but with no Marvel film coming out, is Indiana Jones Dial of Destiny too soon to get a trailer for Captain America? Might not be. Maybe we get one in a couple weeks. May not be. I mean, the movie doesn't come out until next May, but it might. But it might not be.
They gotta have something filmed. Yeah, if they've got him parading around in a suit and already getting still shots.
Yeah. Secret Invasion hits Disney Plus here in a couple weeks, so maybe, you know, or maybe a teaser trailer. But it's just, you know, you pay attention to these marketing things on the internet. You know, when they release official images, there's usually more marketing comes shortly after. So
it could be for something. Yeah.
And first look at Captain America 4. A couple of trailers this week. Justice League New World is the next Justice League DC animated film coming out in July. All I can say about this is I hope it's good, because DC animated, other than Long Halloween and Man of Tomorrow, have been kind of lacking in the new Tomorrowverse. You know, I went back and I've watched like Apocalypse War and some of those ones that in the old DC animated universe, and they're so good. But so far, this Tomorrowverse stuff has not been as good. And I can't help but think DC has noticed it. Sales have been down. Ratings have been down. I don't know. Come on, Warner Brothers. Get your shit together.
Maybe they'll have Flash run back the other way.
Yeah. Right.
Reset maybe it again.
Maybe Justice League New World will be better. We'll see. We got a new TV spot style trailer this week for Ahsoka. Not a whole lot of new footage in it, except people are freaking out over a image where in the trailer where Sabine's wielding a green lightsaber. Well, that doesn't mean she's a Jedi, folks. I mean, if you paid attention to Clone Wars, or not Clone Wars, Star Wars Rebels, Sabine is a warrior, and she handled the darksaber, so it would make sense that she can handle a lightsaber. I mean, out of context, you can't assume much. She probably is in a situation where she has to grab a lightsaber and defend herself, I would imagine, from the looks of the trailer. I mean, I don't think she's a Jedi, or there's anything leading to people to believe that. I think it's just a shot from the trailer that they threw in there to throw people off. Just like when we got the trailer for Mandalorian Season 3 and you saw all the Jedi's with lightsaber, and then you realize, oh, it was just a flashback to Order 66. So, you know, I mean, it's called misdirection, people. That's what trailers do.
Yeah, man. Just like in the movie we're talking about today, when, you know, Transformers was going to come to the big screen, they tried to say that Optimus Prime was going to be a fire truck. People fucking lost it. they're just fucking with you.
Yeah. Well, that's all the news I got. So we can lead into today's film. We've covered the classic Transformers, the animated film, and we've covered the first live action Transformers film, which I still enjoy. And We may get around eventually to covering a couple of the other live action films. I don't know about Revenge of the Fallen, maybe Dark of the Moon. I enjoyed that one.
Revenge of the Fallen was rushed. Yeah,
but we thought we would skip forward and talk about arguably the maybe the best live action Transformers film. I don't know if it's better than Transformers. Maybe it's on par with it.
Similar story.
And that
too.
Is the spinoff slash light reboot of the Transformers series called Bumblebee, which stars everyone's favorite Volkswagen Transformer, and it takes place in 1984, 85. Remember correctly?
87.
Okay, I knew it was around there. Mm-hmm. And starring the always charismatic and cute Haley Steinfeld as the human counterpart in this episode, as we get an incredibly cool sequence at the beginning of this film, which with Generation Style 1 characters, we get to see Shockwave, Soundwave, Optimus Prime, Ratchet, just a boatload of boner-inducing live-action Generation 1 Transformers.
And great definition, too. Soundwave.
In the first five minutes of this film, as Cybertron's under attack, and we see Optimus send Bumblebee to Earth to be its protector and to make sure it's safe until Optimus rounds up all the other Transformers across the universe and they all join up for more warring later on. But that's essentially what happens in the first few minutes. And then we flash forward and Bumblebee lands on the planet near John Cena and some of his troops and gets immediately into fighting with some Decepticons, which I'm not quite sure how they got to the planet so fast. I had texted you. They never really do say, do they? I was watching the movie after I texted you. I never saw, how did the Decepticons know Bumblebee was there? It's like,
they're like, Optimus is like, there's a planet that they cannot find. Right. It's called Earth.
And then all of a sudden, there's Decepticons there. You're like, wait, what happens? But, you know, it's Transformers. We'll forget.
They'll never find you. How'd they get here?
So Bumblebee basically gets his ass kicked by these Transformers and has to escape and go into hiding. And, and then he's found by Haley Steinfeld, who plays, I've done forgot her character name. Because it's Transformers. You never remember the
Charlie.
Character.
Charlie.
And,
I had to think for a second.
As the Decepticons infiltrate the military and convince the military that they're good guys and want assets or satellites so they can find the traitor Bumblebee. They do so, and we get John Cena gets to deliver one of the best lines in a Transformers movie. Like, they're called Decepticons. It's in their name. Does that not ring a bell? And it's so true. the military is absolutely fucking stupid in this movie.
Making them incompetent. That's the comedy element.
That's probably my only beef with this film, is in Bay's films, despite his action and exploding thing everywhere, Bay has a lot of respect for the military. He always has in his films. And he doesn't play the military dumb. You know?
No, he never does.
But in Travis Knight's live action films, now Travis Knight made Kubo and the Two Strings, an incredibly amazing animated film. And this is his first live action film. And I'm not going to blame Travis Knight. You can't blame the director, but the script writers in Bumblebee make the military dumb. They really buy into these evil. The robots even look evil, Matt, the Decepticons. They don't look friendly. Bumblebee looks friendly. And they buy into it. They leave him access to a satellite. So they're going to try to take over the planet as they find Bumblebee. And by some miracle of working, Charlie has to work with Bumblebee to come up with a plan to stop the Decepticons. And somehow it all works out. And they stop the Decepticons. Bumblebee saves the day. He sends a message to Optimus Prime at the end. And Optimus is like, we will be to Earth and we will save mankind, yada, yada, yada. And it's really cool. And it sounds ridiculous and dumb, but overall the movie works quite a bit. It's a very entertaining, fun Transformers movie.
Well, it's E.T.
Yeah.
That was the goal, to make it like E.T. And to get back to what made the first Transformers film successful, they wanted, you know, a little less Bay type action in there. There's still explosions. There's still fighting. You know, we just get it kind of spread out, you know, throughout the film, and there's not overload from
and,
it.
And Travis shoots it with wider angles so you can see what's going on.
Yes.
Sometimes Bay's close ups are a little like, okay, wait, what's going on? But yeah,
and you can't really see everybody, and the way the way the color scheme is, it's like, you know, bringing it back to Gen 1 worked really well for just being able to see the action, being able to see, you know, what's going on. I feel like whenever I'm watching a Bay film, I'm kind of like, what's going on? Who's flipping where? Because they're kind of, you know, colored the same. Megatron, you know, didn't really look like Megatron. Yeah.
Right.
And Starscream kind of looked like Starscream a little bit, but it's like Ironhide looked nothing like Ironhide, you know, in the Bay films. But really now, you know,
will be any similar resemblance to their Gen 1 characters.
And in this film, you can, oh man, that sound wave, you know, oh, that's Ironhide. Oh,
right.
You know, you get all of that. And you're able to see everything. We got a cat, and he's trying to eat my my microphone cord. He thinks he can play with it. And I was like, man, it's like, why am I getting tugging on my cord? But yeah, that's one thing that I really liked about this film, and it brought it back to what made the franchise successful. You know, we did have, you know, Shia LaBeouf do what Shia LaBeouf did for the first film, and that's a boy in his car. We have a girl in his car this time. And just no Megan Fox, you know. But hey, you know, Haley's still a car guru and a good mechanic, and that's cool. She's able to fix B, and
she's,
you know, make
she's
it
hella
more,
charming. She's hella charming on screen, you know.
Yeah, I like her in the role.
She was great in True Grit. I mean, she's great in this. You know, it's a shame they didn't bring her back for Rise of the Beast, you know?
Yeah.
But I know it's like 10 years later, but still, you know.
And they had originally wanted this film to be a prequel / light reboot, but then after the success of it and the hype, they're like, yeah, this is a full on reboot. You know, we're going to do away with the Shia LaBeouf stuff, which, you know, is nice that we don't have someone just screaming Bumblebee, you know, all the time. You know, Shia LaBeouf, I feel like he screamed a lot in the Transformers movies. And I'm like, man, I'm glad we don't have to hear Shia LaBeouf scream again. I was like, the acting was cool, but I was like, man, why do you gotta scream all the time? I don't know. Right. Maybe that's a weird nitpick.
Here's the thing about Shia. People knock Shia, but he's not a bad actor. You know, he's really not.
He's not.
Yeah.
No, he's not. He had a nice run before he, you know, started going crazy and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully he's doing better. I haven't really paid attention to him. But he did give us some solid Transformer films.
And hopefully he hooked up with Megan Fox at least once after two films. I mean, you know, I'm just saying.
Hopefully, man. You can only hope at least have something to take away from that other than a paycheck and experience. But yeah, man, John Cena, I liked having John Cena there. I think he's always a good military type actor. I like that, you know, it took time to develop some of these characters because in the Bay films, I feel like, you know, you had Bumblebee, and Bumblebee's got spunk, he's got heart. And then you're like, okay, Optimus, he's obviously a really good leader. Got leadership capability, and then you're like Ironhide, and you're like, okay, you know, he's just kind of there, and that everything else is just kind of there, and you don't have any other development. This one, I think you really took time to develop the Transformers that were in the film. So hopefully we get more of that as we get into Rise of the Beasts, and you know, always nice for, you know, see Peter Cullen voicing Optimus over and over again.
Well, it's crazy. And go back to Cena a little bit. You know, Cena, I couldn't get into the Peacemaker very much. We talked about it on the show, but I don't really have a problem with Cena as an actor. Like, you know, he wants to be The Rock, you know, basically. You know, he's a younger version, a wrestler turned acting, but he just hasn't gotten the right roles, I think, to get the respect that The Rock has had, or even Bautista. And, you know, the funny, crazy thing about The Rock, too, is, you know, his overall movie career, other than some of the Fast films and a couple others, and of course voicing in Moana, The Rock hasn't exactly been a box office huge draw. You know, he's had a lot more films that have flopped than have been successful, and people don't realize that.
That's true.
But yet studios keep paying him money because – but here's the thing. The Rock is super charisma, is super charismatic, and so people buy into it. And Cena is a really great guy, and everyone knows about the Make-A-Wish thing and how many he does and things he does for kids, and he's an incredible human being. You know, he's just a great human. But he just, for some reason, when it comes to box office success, he hasn't really jumped to that big leadership role as a big leading man. But he's funny. Like, it was a movie he did with Game Night. That was hilarious. You know, he had some funny moments.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so Game he Night, has
Blockers.
Yeah. He has ability to. He has ability to be charismatic, and he plays well off of other people. And I really think he works well in comedy more than maybe action roles sometimes.
I think if you put together a nice action comedy with him, in the right setting, he could be really good.
Right. And I think that's the biggest thing with seeing the trailers for Rise of the Beast is, there's no connection to Bumblebee. I can see why Hailee Steinfeld's character is supposed to be 10 years older. Cause I think I read Rise of the Beast in 96. You could have brought back Cena's character, you know, he could pull off being 10 years older. And from looks of the trailers, and I think that's the biggest thing, is where's that connection to let people know there's a continuity to Bumblebee, and that Bumblebee was a prequel / reboot. And, Optimus at least looks kind of like Generation 1 Optimus still, and Optimus Primal. But I think I have decided I'm going to wait, because the way these movies are hitting Paramount Plus, I think Rise of the Beast will be on Paramount Plus by August. You know, and I think I'm just going to be patient, wait on it. Especially with The Flash coming out and Indiana Jones, I just can't go see everything. It costs too much money.
Yeah, it's one of those things. It's like, you know, you gotta pick one or two and just kind of stick with those. It's oversaturated.
And this month of June, with I had to see Spider-Man, got to see The Flash, have to see Indiana Jones. It's like Transformers just kind of the odd man out. And then there's really, after Indiana Jones, I mean, it's Mission Impossible, but that's not, I think that's July 24th, towards the end of July. So, that's coming real soon too. And, just sometimes you can't see them all at the box office, but you know, Bumblebee was a pleasant surprise when it came out. You know, I at first I didn't want to see it. You know, I really was kind of like, I don't really want, you know, I'm kind of done with Transformers at that point, but then I did go see it based on reviews. The reviews came out. It was really well reviewed. I was like, you know what? I'm going to go see it. And, what year did this come out? I'm trying to think. Did I take both boys? 2019? 18 or 19, maybe? It's been a few years.
That was 2018. Yeah.
So I think I took Michael. I probably didn't take Whitey. He might have been too young back then. But I remember going to see it and really enjoyed it more than I thought I would when it came out, because I really thought that it was going to be, but the reviews were well done. And I don't think Travis Knight has made another live-action film since. You know, he really likes his hand in animation, but he's definitely got some skill with live action. I think it's a well shot film. I also did like to, going back, like we said, the comedy in this film is well placed. It's not sometimes the Shia LaBeouf Transformers films, the comedy got to be a little, I don't know if annoying is the right word, but sometimes a little bit too much. And then this is definitely, this is much better, well placed comedy. I also like Charlie's relationship with Memo, you know, and how he comes into play with everything. Just a shy, nerdy kid, and likes the girl, and she doesn't really notice him. I thought that was well played. Definitely another 1980s Amblin Entertainment ET style relationship in those films.
Yeah, all the popular kids, you know, '80s stuff.
And my thing is the hot blonde chick that's an annoying bitch. She's not even that hot. Like, I would take Hailee Steinfeld's Charlie any day over her, you know?
Heck yeah, dude. Especially, you know, you get stuck on the side of the road, she'd get you going, man. She brings skills to the table.
That's right. And she's cute too. So, you know, I mean, forget that blonde bimbo. You know, I did like where Bumblebee plays You Got the Touch. That was a cool nod to the 80s film and all that.
Yes.
Which was that was definitely a nice throwback.
Stan Bush, The Touch.
I remember then playing up that there was a nod to the 80s film in this, and then when I saw how they used it, I'm like, oh, that's pretty genius. You know, And but you know, we have Rise of the Beast fixing it theaters, and next year the Transformers 1 animated film is coming out. That I'm definitely curious about. I want to know more about that and see what it is when it comes out. But it sounds interesting. But what more is there to say about Bumblebee? I mean, just a good entertaining film. You can watch it on Paramount Plus if you haven't seen it. If you've dismissed it as being a silly Transformers film, it's a pretty fun science fiction movie. And
I know that was my fault, you know, and discovering this film, I was like, oh, it's another Transformer film. You know, it's going to be the same thing. You know, after last night, you know, I couldn't bring myself to go watch it. And then you're like, hey man, it's really good. And I watched it and I'm like, man, I guess I should have seen this in theaters.
Yeah, definitely. But definitely
check it on HBO Max. Yeah. Or no, Paramount Plus. Sorry.
Paramount Plus. Paramount owns the Transformers films. Yeah, the last night was. I need to go back and try to watch last night just to see if it's, because I've read some stuff where people were saying it's not quite as bad as you think it is. But I'm like, man, I remember watching it and it being real incoherent.
It is kind of,
but
you know.
But I know there's been a movement where people have come around to it.
Yeah, yeah. I like the lore of it, where it goes back to medieval times and. Yeah. You know, there's like some cool Cybertron tech that was given to King Arthur, and it's given to Mark Wahlberg.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah. That part's
cool. I might have to give it a shot. Now, I do know I didn't mind Age of Extinction. That was cool with the Dinobots. And I like Dark of the Moon. Now, I did give Revenge of the Fallen a second chance, and I still did not like that one very much. When a Transformer is dangling his nuts, I'm like, okay, this is stupid.
Yeah. You
know, it was just.
There's some things that just don't make sense and just shouldn't be in a film, and that's one of them.
Yeah, definitely. All right, well, next week's film, we decided moments before we started today's show, because we had an open week. Before we get into a couple of big weeks with The Flash and Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny, it's a film. Christopher Nolan has a new film coming out in July, also called Oppenheimer, which apparently is rated R. So I think I'm going to have to wait on that one, because it's kind of difficult when you have kids to go see a rated R film. Yeah. And apparently, it's only rated R because Christopher. What's the actor's name playing the lead?
Scarecrow.
28 Days Later guy. But apparently he drops a lot of F-bombs in the movie. They said otherwise it's not violent. There's no sex. It's just a lot of language. So the MPAA.
I thought it was the hydrogen bomb.
Right. So we're going to cover Nolan's film that came out during COVID, and a lot of people may have not seen, but they should see, because I think it's a pretty cool science fiction film, and that is Tenet.
All I have for you is a word. It'll open the right doors, some of the wrong ones too. Use it carefully.
To do what I do, I need some idea of the threat we face.
As I understand it, we're trying to prevent World War III.
I'm not saying Armageddon here.
No. Something worse.
I gather you have an interest in a certain Russian national.
Mike, bring me in.
You really want to know?
He can communicate with the future.
Time travel.
No.
Inversion.
Aim it and pull the trigger. You're not shooting the bullet, you're catching it.
Whoa.
Well, I've seen too much.
Well, we'll try and keep up.
Your duty transcends national interests. This is about survival.
It seems bold.
Bold, I'm fine with. I thought you were gonna say nuts.
This is
where our worlds collide.
How would you like to die?
Old.
You chose the wrong profession.
What'll happen here?
Hasn't happened yet.
There are people in the future who need us. Who need a tenant.
We need to save them here and now.
This reversing the flow of time wasn't us being here now. I mean, it never happened.
You want to crash a plane,
but not from the air. That was so dramatic.
Well, how big a plane?
That part is a little dramatic.
It is on HBO Max. It stars Denzel Washington's son. I can't think of his name, no disrespect. And Robert Pattinson and Kenneth Branagh. And this is a pretty cool film, man, that I think a lot of people said they didn't understand it. They didn't quite get it. But, you know, I think that's a great thing about Nolan as a director is he makes you think a little bit about what he's doing on screen sometimes when he's not making a Batman film. So, Matt, you've never seen Tenet, so this will be a first time watch for you. So I hope you enjoy it. And thanks, looking man. Forward to hearing your thoughts late next week on the show.
I have to check it out and make sure I give it some time. And do I
and
have
it is
turn
true.
The volume you're pretty high?
Well, I didn't have a problem understanding. There's a few sequences that you might want to hit subtitles, but you know, I think that was the way it was broadcast in theaters because I didn't see this in theaters. I watched it at home and I didn't have a problem watching it. So,
okay.
You know, but that is next week on the show. We will cover Tenet from Christopher Nolan. And until then, the RebelRadioPodcast.com for all your Rebel Radio needs. Listen to last week's episode, Indiana Jones and Last Crusade as well, and go back and listen to our Compalooza coverage as we talk about the show we were at. And but until next week, thank you as always for listening. This has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
And remember, as always, just go there and
do it.